on the huddle with me this evening, we have Joseph Bagani of Child Fund and Tim Beveridge, News Talk ZB host. Hi, you two.
Hello. Hey.
Tim, are you ready for the old power? You've got kiddies in the house. Are you ready for the power cut tomorrow?
I stick my head in the sand on this and just assume that we'll be lucky enough that we won't be one of the ones to have our power cut. But, you know, get the woolly hat going. I'm amazed they want us to not charge our phones. I wasn't thinking that would be a major drain on resources, but it's a bit of a worry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. Josie, do you reckon, how do you rate the chances we actually glide through this and it's fine?
Look, if it's going to be fine tomorrow morning, it won't be fine another morning, because it's not just John Kidd, and I know you're talking to him, who predicted this. It's people like, and I'm, you know, full disclosure, my husband works in the gas sector. He works for the gas regulator. So, you know, John Kidd, John Pagani, any John, lots of Johns have been warning about this for 5 years. And I've been listening to my husband go, a crunch is coming. And when they said, we won't have enough energy if you just ban oil and gas, it wasn't code. They actually meant
we won't have
enough energy.
Josie, I remember talking to your husband when I was doing Talk Back in Wellington, and that would have been, I reckon 2018, 2019, so 5 years ago as well. And he said to me, we are in so much trouble in winters ahead. So you're right.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's not that we don't want to transition to cleaner renewables, you know, wind, water. And incidentally, as you said, the lakes are actually full. The hydro lakes are full. It's that we can't do it now, because 5-6 years ago when this happened, 7 years ago when they banned oil and gas, it was like, no, we'll have renewables, it'll all be fine. Well, you know, as Shane Jones says, unicorn kisses and renewables, where are they? I know they're coming, but they're not here yet. That's the thing.
Tim, I know that your visceral hatred of Labor means that you absolutely blame them for this situation. But do you think most people realise how much they've stuffed us on this?
I don't think we can just sheet this back to the Labor government as well. I mean, we've had a long-term lack of investment in infrastructure, but the virtue signalling around coal, and the green stance on that, none of it's actually based on reality. It's all based on, this is how we'd like the universe to be, and therefore let it be so. But I'm afraid, it's just not how the world works. It's not how it works here with the infrastructure. And they've just... they've been a victim of ideology ahead of pragmatism.
Yeah. Hey, Josie, on another subject, a different kind of... did you want to say something there? You sounded like you did.
Oh, I'm always up for saying something, Heather. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Tim. It's not... I mean, I do sheet this home to the Labor government, because they made it their keystone policy to ban oil and gas. And everybody who criticised it was accused of being a climate change delayer, if not a climate change denier.
Yeah.
And all that they were saying, and this is globally now, UK, Labor Party coming into government very soon, probably in the UK, Keir Starmer is saying exactly the same thing. We need to be realistic about what a transition to renewables looks like.
Yes.
If they're not there, we can't just say, everybody's got to sit in the cold and not do anything.
Keir Starmer is an example of being able to hold the ideology but be pragmatic about it. It's just a pity we didn't get that version of the Labor Party here. Anyway, we'll take a break. Come back to you guys, 1:45. Back with the huddle, Tim Beveridge, Josie Bagani. Josie, what I was going to ask you before is, are you looking forward to your tax cut? Modest but meaningful.
Modest but meaningful. That sounds to me like what people say to their kids when they're not getting a Christmas present, they're getting a goat for someone in another country, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not holding out much hope. I do think, and I know you disagree with this, Heather, but I do think they should have delayed the tax cuts, not because I don't want a tax cut, but because I think right now when you've got a huge deficit, we're so broke as a country, and also we're dealing with inflation. So, you know, if interest rates have gone up, you know, roughly $100 at least for some people when they're paying the mortgages or whatever, tax cuts will be modest. So let's say it's, I don't know, $10, $20 or something like that. I'd rather they did something to fix inflation. And everybody says, who knows better than me, that tax cuts will influence inflation or keep inflation up for longer. So you're better to deal with the interest rates, delay the tax cut. What she could do, and I doubt she's done this, is she could have done, we will do a tax cut and we'll delay it and we'll do it in 18 months' time or something.
Yeah. No, Josie, I think most people would agree with you on that. Would you agree with Josie on that, Tim?
You know, I just think that this lingering on adjusting the tax brackets is, I'm afraid, I think they've got to address it now. I think people have had enough of bracket creep and inflation stealing more and more and a higher percentage of their wages or their salaries. And look, I just don't agree. I think we have to address it. And it's not I sort of get a bit hacked off with the words that are used around this. You could say it's a tax cut, but it's a long overdue shift of the tax brackets for inflation. So people should be back to paying the same proportion of their income in tax as they have 5, 10, and 15 years ago.
Man after my own heart.
Fair point, Tim. Fair point.
Yeah, driven by the dollars, mate. Yeah. Hey, Josie, do you reckon, would you agree with me on this one, though, that Chris Bishop has made a mistake going hard on the intensification in Wellington?
Oh, no, I'm going to disagree with you on this one, too. Partly because, like you, we do agree that Wellington is just, you know, dying. I mean, the empty buildings, that it feels like nothing is growing here. It feels like everything is closing. And one way you fix that is to have more people, more homes, more ratepayers that can cover the cost of better infrastructure, yep, better jobs, and so on.
But,
so
Josie, why do you have to do it just across everything, right? Like, you just go hell for leather on Mount Vic, build your six stories. Why can it not be controlled and be like, listen, guys, you can do it. You can do six stories across Kent and Cambridge Terrace, do it up Adelaide Road, whatever. You know, like, be more prescribed about it.
Yeah, but if you look at, yeah, you're right, like Adelaide Road, you just go, oh my God, there's just nothing happening down here.
Just commercials,
yeah.
For God's
sake, build something, yeah. And I do think, look, it's not that there's going to be no rules at all. It's not, there won't be any, you know, it won't just be build whatever you want at six stories. It'll be build something that's in character, build some stuff that looks nice. It's not just going to be a free-for-all. And I think we just don't have to be so afraid of density. I mean, we've lived in this sort of slightly, you know, paradise idea,
Tim,
that you can just have your quarter acre.
Says Josie, who lives on a giant lifestyle block with literally nobody around her.
Out of Wellington,
well,
Heather.
That's the point. Look, on a micro level, Heather, I read stories about people who've been in an area for 30 or 40 years and, you know, the encroachment of intensification would not be pleasant for them. But it's a city, you know, if you're going to go up anywhere, you've got to do it. I mean, not everywhere can be like Paris, the city of lights, where everything's, I don't know, actually even they go up for quite a few stories. But I just think it's a fact of life. We have to intensify and let's do it well. Let's keep within the character of the neighbourhoods and things like that. But the story that was in the Post, I think, about, you know, the couple had been in their house in Brooklyn for 40 or 50 years, I'm really sympathetic to them. But it's also, I'm sorry, but that's what happens with cities.
Yeah, the story was that they had this massive building go up next to this and cast the shadow on them for basically all a half of the whole winter.
Yeah.
Hey, have either of you guys watched Baby Reindeer?
Oh my God.
No.
Josie, have you?
I think that there is going to be a blackout tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Interview is coming out.
Yes, this is what I want to ask you. Is it okay at 7 a.m. to turn on the Piers Morgan interview with the real life Martha and turn the country's lights out?
Just unplug your EV and put the radio on or go online and listen to it. It'll be spellbinding. Anyone who hasn't watched Baby Reindeer won't know what we're talking about. But, I mean, I do wonder, part of me is going, clearly the woman has a mental health problem. She's been a stalker.
Yes.
Is this slightly exploitative?
No, stop that nonsense.
Listening.
No, stop it, stop it. She's an adult. I worry about Piers Morgan. What if she starts stalking him now?
I was talking about Piers Morgan.
Oh, that's all right then. No, absolutely.
Mental
health problems. Hey, guys, listen, thank you both of you. Appreciate it. Joseph Bagani, Tim Beveridge, our huddle this evening.
For more from Heather Duplessy-Allen Drive, listen live to News Talk ZB from 4 p.m. weekdays or follow the podcast on iHeartRadio.